And welcome to the Social Disease. I'm Bridget.
And I'm Jasper.
Happy New Year. Been a while. Really busy.
We took a bit of a hiatus.
I mean, Jasper is living it up, California style, dealing with some, kids, being a teacher, all that jazz. I'm just living the New York style, being a teacher here, all that jazz.
We just had to hibernate
We
for the
really
winter.
did. It's been a rough 4 months, but now we're, or 3 months, and now we're in month four and we're back and we're ready to go.
Yeah, the other part of it is because, of course, we were transitioning from next class all the way back to the 80s. And honestly, at least this first junior high season, I am not a huge fan. Sorry to say.
Oh, starting strong.
Yeah.
Well, why not?
Well, for one thing, most of it is just stupid middle school plots, which.
My favorite, you mean?
Yeah, well, both of our favorites, apparently. And in terms of like analysis, which of course is kind of the point of our podcast, right? There
Yeah.
isn't much to analyze, at least in season one. Like most of the storylines are just one-offs.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Like really the only character when I was watching the season who like has kind of an arc throughout the season is Stephanie.
Yep. And then where does she go? Off the show. I don't know if it's after this season, but I do remember being like, where'd the main character go?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Stephanie sticks around through season two, but after that, she's gone.
Yeah, she was absolutely the face of Degrassi. We're not going to talk about her today, but it's just we gotta acknowledge that she was definitely the main character.
Yes, for sure. But really, everybody else, like everybody got their moment in the spotlight, really, at one point or another. But nobody really had a continuing arc throughout the season. It was just like, oh, this thing is happening to this character right now. And it'll get resolved at the end of the episode, and we won't talk about it ever again.
Yeah, they definitely had a few. I mean, they had like the running characters that were talked about the most. Like we said, Stephanie, Joey, I would say, is definitely the other lead. Like he's always around, he's always just kind of like involved in different things. Then we have like Arthur and just a few other. Like Shane's kind of in it, but like Spike's more in it, but like not really. Like we're still just meeting everybody, I feel like.
Right. It's very much a first season of a show, for sure.
Yeah, which is different than usual Degrassi with the running different plots. I mean, I think they have kind of like an A plot, B plot thing going on, but they don't really have like a C plot. And then those characters we don't really see again for like a little bit, or they'll be in the background, or they're just like in and out, which is definitely different than our what we're used to usually.
Yeah, especially with going from all the nonsense with Esme at the end of next class to going to like Melanie is insecure about how small her boobs are as a 12-year-old. It's quite the tonal shift.
Oh yeah. That is absolutely true. I totally agree with that.
So I think the other part of it is that neither of us watched Degrassi Junior High or Degrassi High until we were adults. Like, I think this is both of our second times watching through. For modern Degrassi, both of us watched it like as we were growing up. Like, even next class, I was, let's see, I think I was 19. No, wait. It ended in 2017, right? Right. Next class, the last season ended the same weekend that I turned 21.
What? No way.
Yeah.
That's
So
so.
like even next class, which were the final seasons of Degrassi, I was still like a teenager for most of it, even though I was in college, you know? So I could
Yeah.
still kind of relate to the characters, even though I was a bit older than them in for the next class era. But I first watched Junior High when I was like 22 or 23. So it's like I didn't grow up watching those characters. so I don't have as strong of an attachment to most of them. And also the fact that I haven't seen the episodes as much. Like, I've probably seen all the other Degrassi episodes like 5 or 6 times each, if not more.
Yeah, I think the first time I watched this one through was when we started talking about doing the podcast during COVID, honestly. I think I pulled it up on YouTube and was like, all right, I have some time. Why don't I just watch through this? And I was like, oh my, this is like a little corny. But it's so fun to see Caitlin and Joey and, you know, Spike and Snake as they were. And even Mr. Raditz, who looks like the same.
Yeah. He just has a mustache.
Right. It just kind of gives us a little bit more towards the backstory of who those characters are in like season one. Right. When we end up watching it. So I don't know. I didn't mind it that much. I feel like it's kind of, it's corny, but not too much. Like, I think that if HBO were to make it, it would be insane. I think it would be like really graphic and awful. Like, this is just a perfect representation of like what middle school is.
Yeah, absolutely. But the problem with us watching it as being in our late 20s is that we can't relate to any of it.
Really. Oh no, it's like completely unrelated. Plus, it also takes place in like the 80s.
Yeah.
So there's like that piece of it too.
And like the show is aggressively 80s also.
Oh my God, the hair, the outfits.
Yeah.
The school, just like everything. Like, kids are just coming to school with no backpack. I'm like, what is happening?
Like, I feel like even with like 2000s Degrassi, like Emma era,
mm-hmm.
like, yes, there are some like 2000s tropes in there, but I still feel like most of it you could watch today in 2023 and you'd say, okay, this is still mostly how people dress or act and stuff, right? Whereas yeah. For 80s Degrassi, it's much more retro in a lot.
I love it. I love yeah. Spike's hair especially.
Yeah, like, it's very fun. But it is like aggressively 80s, like even with like the background music and stuff.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This theme song ranks like the lowest of the low. I can't listen to it anymore.
I kind of love it, honestly.
Wow, did not see that coming. No, I do not enjoy that theme song.
It'll grow on you.
Probably. I still got a few more seasons to go. I even love that I have to switch my DVD disc after like 5 episodes.
Yeah.
Feeling very retro over here.
Yeah, but in order to bridge the gap from, you know, modern Degrassi to classic Degrassi, we are going to be talking today about all of the characters who are relevant to modern Degrassi. So that will be Spike and Caitlin, pretty much. Well, Joey is relevant, but he's kind of more ubiquitous. He doesn't really have too many things for himself. And Snake doesn't do anything in this season. Besides,
he's just tall.
Yeah, he's tall and flirts with Melanie a little bit. But along with Spike and Caitlin are kind of significant others, even though I don't think either couple is official at any point. And that is Shane and Rick. So I think we're basically just going to go roughly chronologically, because like we said, none of these characters have really more than 1 or 2 plots in the whole season. And the first that comes up in the season is Rick's abuse by his dad.
Woohoo, let's do it.
Yeah, going right into it. So in the first scene of this episode is that like Rick is getting ready for school or something, and like there's no milk in the fridge or whatever, and Rick's dad beats him for that. And that's just kind of the cold open of the episode. After that, we transition to Joey, where Joey is kind of annoyed at his parents throughout the episode for being controlling or whatever. And Joey ends up going to Rick's house to borrow Rick's brother's jean jacket because Joey's mom like sold Joey's jean jacket or washed it when he didn't want it washed or something. So Joey just needs a new jean jacket, and Rick offered his brother's jean jacket. And while Joey's at Rick's place, Rick's dad comes home and hits him right in front of Joey, like literally beating him up. And Joey just kind of awkwardly leaves while Rick is getting beaten to a pulp. So the next day, Joey is like going to the school secretary to say something, and he then asks, in theory, what would you do if somebody's parents were hitting them? This prompts the school secretary to call social services on Joey's parents because Joey happens to have a black eye from a skateboarding accident. So the school secretary thinks that Joey is talking about himself. So Joey goes home to find the social worker at his house being like, why are you beating your child? And Rick also goes home with Joey so that Joey could pay Rick for the jacket. And when Joey's like, oh, my parents don't hit me, I don't know what you're talking about, the social worker clues in to Rick's body language and kind of pulls Rick aside and talks to him. And the episode ends basically with Rick getting out of the house with his dad and going to live with his brother. Also, throughout this episode, we see Caitlin and Susie are like trying to get Rick to smile because he's always so pouty and grumpy and stuff. And they are very unsuccessful throughout the episode. But the episode ends where Rick thanks Joey for all of his help with getting him out of his abusive household. And Rick calls him a buddy and smiles. And Caitlin and Susie are like, oh my God, he smiled. And that's it.
Well done. Wow, significantly shorter than anything I've ever been used to in my life from you.
I'm growing.
Your growth. Okay, so obviously we have to acknowledge the Sean parallels here.
Oh, yes.
I mean, starting with the fact that this kid always wears the same t-shirt and Sean always wore a tank top. So let's go. I don't know. That was just, I pulled that one out now. Really, what it is that Rick was held back. Sean was held back. Rick has a tough life. Sean had a tough life. Sean had to find somewhere else to live. Rick kind of had to find somewhere else to live. I hate that his name is Rick.
Yeah.
I really feel like looking at him, I want to be like, why did we pick Rick? That of all, like, I know he came first than the other Rick, which, if you guys don't remember who Rick is, he was the one who shot Jimmy. So, but honestly, I liked his character, you know, like this was kind of, he had a, like I said before we started this, HBO vibes. We really got to see some horrible abuse, or at least like to a point where it's like, oh, now the door closes, or like, oh, now we walk away. But they showed some tough stuff. That was like pretty emotional for just like a 27-minute episode.
Yeah, like I would say, despite my complaining about the middle school plots, when they do go there in the season, they really do a pretty good job of kind of showing the situation and not like glorifying it or anything. I did feel that the abuse scenes were like a little goofy.
Really? The one with Joey there was not, in my opinion, just a little mean. I
Yeah,
don't know.
it's like the dad didn't even acknowledged that Joey was there before he like went to go beat up his child, you know?
Well, 80s. Right? Like, I don't know if people were more open about it, about just hitting kids. I think they were, but like not to this extent.
Yeah. But like kind of comparing to Craig, for example, I feel like there was a bit more nuance with the way that Craig's dad abused him, where not to say that like parents don't abuse their kids over small stupid things like the milk carton being empty, but I just felt like they didn't show like enough to kind of explain that, oh, this is a small thing for no reason. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that they were like, how can we show that this guy's like fucking nuts? Because I think what it is the assumption is that like the abuse has been going on for a long time, because even Caitlin brings up, oh, Rick is on probation, like he always has bruises, he must get into fights. So like this is not just the first time thing. So it probably started as something bigger, and then now the dad's just like a psycho and just over, you know, oh, you gave this kid a bottle of soda that I want to drink, I'm gonna beat the shit out of you, like in front of everybody.
Yeah.
And like, I don't care. But I think that the Joey being there was rough, but it also is such a good thing that he like said something to someone, because we're always like, why didn't you tell an adult? And that's like basically one of the, you know, he goes home, but then he does tell someone, luckily.
Yeah. I did think it was interesting how most of the episode is from Joey's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Like, kind of the point of the episode, at least for Joey, was he saying, oh, my parents are abusing me because my mom threw out my favorite jean jacket. And the lesson he learned is actually, my parents are pretty nice.
Right? So I was thinking the same thing, because Joey was yelling about child abuse in front of Rick, like, all the time. He's like, my jacket, child abuse, blah, blah, blah. But I think that they did it from his point of view, almost as, like, the PSA. Like, what do you do if someone's being abused? Because, like, they're not going to help themselves. And instead of, like, because Rick isn't. He wasn't going to help himself. Like, we saw that. So I guess it kind of had to be from Joey so that we could see this really cool motorcycle riding Child's Aid guy show up and be like, I'm going to save you. And I was like, what? But the fact that Child Aid guy showed up in the same day also shows that it's the 80s, because they would never do that today.
Yeah, it would take like 12 business days to even give you a call.
Right. And I will say, though, because Rick was talking about his dad riding the motorcycle, or his brother riding a motorcycle so often, that when the motorcycle was parked, I was like, no way is his brother the child aid guy. Like, what a plot twist. It was not. It was just a cool guy on a motorcycle who wants to help children.
Yeah.
I guess the last thing I have to say, I don't know if you have any more to like add, because it really was just like a one episode thing, was, oh no, you know what? I'm going to say two more things. One is that I think they did a pretty good job like continuing keeping him happy through the rest of the season. Like, I don't know if you noticed, but specifically in the plot where he's like, I want $100, like, here's licorice, and like was going around and all that, and just like future episodes, he just is a happier kid. So I understand that they probably were like, now you're not being abused, like, you get to act happier. But I do think that it was cute that it does continue to show that he's a little bit happier. He's not perfect. He still has anger issues for sure, but there is like that difference.
He does talk about living with his brother after this episode too, and how it's a much better place for him. So it's not like they completely forget that any of this happened. To me, it's more that like they don't show the long-term effects of having been abused by your parent.
Yeah. That's, yeah, they never do that, though.
I think they did with Craig.
Well, I think with Craig, the issue was that he became bipolar. And that's not from abuse. That's, like, that's a genetic disorder. Like, it passed through genes. Like, he didn't become bipolar because he was beat by his dad.
Of course. But, like, in terms of Craig's trajectory as a character, you could kind of see, like, you know, his poor treatment of women, for example.
Oh, all that, stop right there. That's all you had to say. true. I guess the other thing that I liked that they did was they kind of introduced the idea of Caitlin, like, finding Rick interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Which then kind of ties into one of her two plots that she has in the whole season.
Well, because Caitlin and Rick are the OG Emma and Sean.
I know. I'm just like, damn, it's almost like I wish Spike was Caitlin in this situation, because how cute would that have been? But I will take it, because Caitlin is environmentally, you know, involved and super smart, and her parents are teachers, and or like a vice principal, and her, you know, Emma's dad was a principal. So it's just all that. That crossover.
Yeah, so that's a good segue into Caitlin, actually.
I know, I did on purpose.
I guess the only last thing I wanted to say for Rick was that it was a cool parallel that Joey is the person to help Rick out, and Joey's also the person to help Craig.
I agree. I think that that was really nice, too.
Yeah.
Cool.
Would have been nice to continue Rick and Joey's friendship, but whatever.
Doesn't Rick also leave the show?
Yes.
Yeah. I liked him too. I was kind of bummed when I was watching. I'm like, so Rick's gone and Stephanie's gone?
Yeah.
And then doesn't Wheels, never mind, we'll get to it.
Yeah. So going into Caitlyn, as Bridget said, Caitlyn has two episodes this season. The first is where Caitlyn starts having some mildly sensual dreams about Miss Avery. They're not really sexual in nature, but I also feel like the implication might have been sexual because they didn't want to actually show her dreams being sexual with the teacher. But either way, Caitlyn is like, I have some weird feelings about Miss Avery, especially when there are rumors going around the class that Miss Avery is a lesbian because she gets dropped off by a woman every day. And Kathleen, the resident bitch of Degrassi, is claiming that she saw Miss Avery in public with this woman and that they kissed. So Caitlyn, Kathleen, and Susie end up talking about Miss Avery being a lesbian at a sleepover and speculating whether it's true or not. And Caitlyn, who has these feelings for Miss Avery and also really likes her as a teacher, starts defending her. Because of this, Kathleen starts suspecting that Caitlyn herself is a lesbian because she is defending Miss Avery, which causes Caitlyn to feel insecure about, like, am I a lesbian? I don't know. And Susie, who is Caitlyn's best friend, starts acting a bit weird around her because of Kathleen kind of putting these ideas in her head. It kind of gets worse when they see Miss Avery kiss this woman who's dropping her off at school every day goodbye. Like, just a little peck on the lips, like, goodbye kiss. So things start going out of control. Caitlyn starts having dreams about everybody in the class bullying her for being a lesbian. It's honestly iconic, with everybody pointing, lesbian, lesbian, lesbian. Every time I see a lesbian, I quote that now. But anyway, Caitlyn then starts to act odd around Miss Avery, saying like, oh, don't touch me on the shoulder in class or whatever, and just acting generally cold towards her. So Miss Avery asks Caitlyn to stay after class. Caitlyn explains what's happening, and Miss Avery explains how, like, it's okay at her age to have some weird dreams, and just because she has a female friend does not mean she's a lesbian, and finally questions whether her being a lesbian should even matter in the first place. So we got potentially gay icon Miss Avery right here. Unfortunately, this plotline never gets brought up again because soon after that, we have Caitlyn and Rick have a crush on each other, but neither of them know it, of course. So Rick decides to kind of make the first move by joining Caitlyn's environmental club. And at the time, the environmental club is putting together a petition to stop the local factory's carbon emissions. And Rick decides to help out. And Rick actually kind of makes the club to take some action with this petition, even though Kathleen, who is the president of the club, is just trying to, like, figure out what the name of the club should be. So Rick kind of goes along with Caitlyn to get a lot of people to sign at the school. And he even encourages Caitlyn to go to the factory itself and talk to some of the managers. Unfortunately, the manager blows them off when they're there, so they do not get anything accomplished. And Kathleen ends up kicking Rick out of the club when she sees him outside school smoking. This causes a whole fight between Caitlyn and Rick about how Caitlyn was defending him in front of the club, and Rick made her look like an idiot when he was smoking. But then Rick counters by saying that Caitlyn just treats him like a charity case and somebody who needs help. So Caitlyn ends up apologizing to him, and they make up and decide to stay friends. And that's it for the both of them.
Nice. I love that you think of the lesbian scene whenever you, I don't know, whenever you hear the word lesbian, like.
No, like, for example, I was playing a video game and there were some vibes between these two female characters, and I was like, lesbian, lesbian, lesbian.
That's so amazing. I love it. But back to Caitlyn. So I'm sure you have thoughts about how this whole episode went, and I would like to hear them.
Okay. Well, for one thing, I was very impressed that a show aimed towards middle schoolers in the 80s was explicitly talking about gay people and not demonizing gay people and questioning whether it is even an issue to be gay in the first place.
Yep, fair.
So when I first watched this, I was super impressed and super proud of Degrassi.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Caitlin doesn't end up being gay, she questions her sexuality, and like they say that that's a fine thing to do,
mm-hmm.
Which is great. I would have loved to have lesbian or even bisexual Caitlin. That would have been iconic, but
sure.
This was probably the most that they could push the network or whatever at the time. Yeah, I really like this episode in general.
Okay, that's good. I honestly wasn't sure where the episode was going to go. I think it took a little bit too long, in my opinion, for them to be like saying, it's okay if you are. Like, I think there was a lot of like, I don't want to be different. I don't want to be bad. My friends will hate me. Like, all these consequences for being gay. But then at the end, when Miss Avery was like, would it change your opinion on me? Like, what you think of me? And like, even though Caitlin wanted to be like, no, like it did. It did. This whole episode was her opinion being changed about Miss Avery. Honestly, but it almost seemed like she had to be like, it's okay. Like, you can talk to a lesbian. They won't make you gay. Like, well, I don't know.
So I wouldn't say viewing Miss Avery as a lesbian necessarily made Caitlin treat her differently. It was more that like Kathleen and Susie making it a big deal is what made Caitlin feel like, oh, I guess it is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that Caitlin herself would have treated Miss Avery differently. It's that because her friends made her feel insecure about liking a potentially lesbian teacher and potentially being a lesbian herself, that's what made her act differently.
Okay. That makes more sense. I was like really nervous if they were going to like ride the line there, but no, well, I think that they, what do you think?
And then my second point is that I think pretty early on in the episode, Melanie says something at like in the hallway, right? Where she's like, I don't know what the big deal is with being a homosexual in the first place.
Oh, yeah. Because she's like, why do you guys care anyway?
Right.
It's like, not that big of a deal. Okay, you're right. Yeah, Melanie's like chill. Kathleen is not chill. I don't know why.
But to your point about being worried about being teased, I think that's something that every closeted gay kid goes through.
So then do you... I mean, we don't really come back to it, but then are we like settled on Caitlin is not gay then?
Well, nothing we see in the decades after this episode has anything about Caitlin being into women at all. So,
and then we never learned if Miss Avery is even gay at all.
No, but I think she is.
I mean, yeah, obviously you don't just kiss your friends on the mouth. Like, you don't hold hands with them in public in town.
Well,
I mean,
I think Kathleen made that up, for one thing.
Well, the kiss wasn't made up, though.
No, not the kiss.
Okay, just the holding hands thing.
But I do think Kathleen made up that she saw Miss Avery in public being romantic with this woman.
Oh, I did not think about that. That's fair. I will say, I will be stealing Miss Avery's response of, do you have a boyfriend? And she said, I have hundreds of boyfriends, but is that any of your business? I was like, wow, that is the best teacher response I've ever heard to that question. I have hundreds of boyfriends.
Iconic.
That was such a good line. I was like, how do we not talk about this more?
But yeah, with regards to Caitlin questioning her sexuality, like I said, I do think it was pretty representative of closeted gay kid being worried about being treated differently if they're out of the closet.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I mean, obviously, you know, looking at it, she's probably having these dreams because she heard the rumors of Miss Avery being a lesbian, and like Miss Avery is very kind to her, and now she's like, does kindness equal crush? ?
Well, that's kind of... she was having the dreams before the rumors, right?
Well, in her dream was everybody being like, there's rumors, like she's a lesbian, like And then she woke up and was like, whoa. So it's not like she like predicted them as Avery was a lesbian. Like I'm sure that other people were had already been talking about it, and then it just kind of like worked her way into the dream, which is why it came up. Because the rumors didn't just start this episode.
Sure, yeah.
So that's why I think she was having the dreams about Miss Avery, because she's literally the only lesbian she knows, or at least like thinks she knows.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. I think it's pretty early on in Degrassi, first of all, because it was like, I feel like what, one of the last few episodes was the first season. And the fact that they addressed this in the 80s, like you said, pretty good. We just don't have any gay characters yet.
Nor will we until Marco.
Yeah, that's kind of the fault in there is like, here's a possible idea, here's possibly one. It's Miss Avery, but we don't actually know for sure.
Yeah.
I guess my last question for you regarding this is, do you think that they should have acknowledged Miss Avery as a lesbian, or do you think that it was better off the way that they did, where she didn't say either way?
I think for the time period, if they explicitly had Miss Avery be a lesbian, then there might have been like public backlash and that
Yeah.
might have affected the show. But even then, it's probably not appropriate for students to know their teachers' sexualities.
That's fair.
Well, I guess that's because, like, straight teachers always talk about, like, oh, my husband or my wife, you know? And gay teachers should also have that same privilege to talk about their partners.
Oh, I totally agree. I think once you're married, not that there's like an actual rule for this, but personally, as a teacher, I don't feel comfortable being like my boyfriend, but I can see where someone could be like my husband
Yeah.
and or my wife and be like, it just feels different. It feels more legitimate, I guess.
Sure. But I guess my point was more that students shouldn't feel entitled to know details of their teachers' private lives.
I agree. That's why she said hundreds of them, but is that any of your business?
Yeah.
Oh,
And
good.
especially for the time, if they had said whether or not Miss Avery was gay, then that could have potentially had a negative impact, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
But even so, like, again, fantastic that they are not that they are, like, would you say that they were showing gays in the pos in a positive light in this episode?
I think that's kind of what I was saying before. It was taking a bit to get there, but I think the way that they presented Miss Avery, they weren't rude. You know, they weren't like, I don't know, judgmental. They were kind of just like their kids being stupid about something that they don't know. And
Yeah.
I don't think that Miss Avery was represented in a way that was like negative, I
Right.
guess.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say that, like, it was necessarily a positive portrayal, but it was more questioning whether it should be a negative portrayal,
Yes.
which is, I guess, a great step forward for the time period,
I know.
especially, like, you know, the whole AIDS crisis was going on at the time.
I was
So.
gonna say we're like, yay, to like the bare minimum, but at the time it wasn't the bare minimum.
Yeah.
So that's where it's different.
Yeah, because even today, it's like people don't really say the word lesbian
No.
in media.
No, I mean, I even when I was taking notes, I kind of wrote, I'm like, Miss Avery Gay question mark. It's
Like,
also a shorter word to type. That wasn't, but that was just on me. That was not, I don't know. But I know that that has been an issue, right? Like people have brought up that the word lesbian isn't said as much. It's usually like, oh, she's bi, or like, oh, they're gay.
yeah, like, lesbian is still kind of in some ways treated as a dirty word. So that's interesting too.
Not on this podcast. Lesbians, lesbians, lesbians.
Yes.
That
But tragically, Caitlin never turns out to be a lesbian. She goes back to heteronormativity with Rick.
with Rick. I mean, okay, so let's talk a little bit about Rick and Caitlin. So as you had mentioned before, they're very obviously the Sean and Emma of this season one. And it's kind of like sad to watch because you want to think that Caitlin actually likes him, but then there's that whole issue of her not admitting it because she feels like sorry for him, basically.
Right.
And it's so back and forth because you're like, do you like him? Do you not? Do you feel sorry for him? Do you not? Like, he obviously likes you. He's doing this weird environmental stuff for you, and you're not even doing it, really.
Yeah. Well, I could understand why none of the people in the club wanted to do it, just because they're middle schoolers and they're
Right.
trying to go against this, conglomerate company thing.
Yes, absolutely.
So, like, they really needed somebody who had a bit more, what's the phrase? Like, confidence? Or,
Balls.
yeah, someone who had some balls to actually get the thing done. Because Kathleen is certainly not a good leader to get anything done.
Oh my God. I wrote Kathleen is the worst. She's like, I don't want to change the name. And then like makes it even longer. I was like, that's hilarious, actually. I'll give it to him. Yeah, no, Kathleen's the worst. She's so judgmental. She's so rude. I just feel like she. Who would she even be compared to? I don't even know. Maybe Paige, but she's like worse than Paige. Because she's like actually genuinely dark soul in there. Like, I can't stand this girl.
Well, we will learn more about Kathleen in the future.
I know, I know. I
But
sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself.
in terms of an analogy, I would say Paige is the closest.
Holly J, maybe?
Yeah, Holly J or Zoe. Because the
Okay.
thing with Kathleen is that she is mean, but she's not necessarily popular like Paige was.
Yeah, no, she's definitely not. That's, I mean, she's not to be rude, but president of the environmental club. Like, you're not the coolest person running this, you know? Yeah, I can't stand her. But you're right. We're not talking about her. We're talking about Rick and Caitlin. And I do think it was adorable that Rick asked Shane for advice about Caitlin.
That was cute.
That was really cute. He was like, yo, what do I do? And Shane's like sitting in the front of the class and he's like, fuck no, I'm not doing that. He's like, what else can I do? I was like, come on, Rick, you gotta do your assignments. That's what you gotta do.
To your point about like, did Caitlin actually like Rick? I think she did, but her kind of pre-misconceptions of him like kind of clouded how she acted towards him. Like, what did they say Caitlin's parents do?
So Caitlin's parents are both teachers, but her mom is a vice principal.
Yeah. Whereas
And
Rick is, living with his brother who rides a motorcycle because his dad abuses him.
his mom left. Yeah, that was so sad. But I do think that it's cute that Caitlin wants to like get to know him, though, you know? Like the fact that they're spending that time together writing this rap song for them to put over the announcements obviously shows they have some interest other than just like her trying to fix him
Yeah.
is basically what I was getting at. I think it was a cute win for Rick. Rick needed a win and that rap was it.
Yes. And it is like pretty much exactly Emma and Sean's season one arc as well, where what was it, the whole squeegee kid debate in season
Oh
one?
yeah. Oh my God.
Where it was basically the same exact thing where Emma isn't thinking about her privilege when interacting with Sean, the same way that Caitlin isn't thinking about how her actions make Rick feel.
Yep. And I th also liked that Rick stood up for himself too with her, where he was like, you guys did nothing. And I did everything. And now I'm kicked out because I smoked a cigarette. I get it though. That's like such an 80s thing too. The fact that everyone's like no smoking, but like he still does anyway in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And just like, it's just so ridiculous. But I get that he joined the club for Caitlyn, so him not really understanding why smoking is ironic in this is fair, in my opinion.
Yeah, because it's not even necessarily that he cared about the petition. He cared because Caitlyn cared.
Yes, which he said that too, which was cute.
Yeah. So.
So we think that in the end they like each other. Do they even end up together?
Not officially.
Right?
I'm trying to remember if Rick, like, when Rick leaves.
I feel like he wasn't in the next season. I feel like he either left right before Stephanie or right after her. But I remember losing both of them and being like, they were like my favorite characters in this.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently, okay, I'm on the Degrassi wiki. He's in a couple episodes in season two, but I don't think he has any more storylines.
Okay. Didn't something happen to his actor?
That's Wheels' actor.
Oops, never mind. Okay. I will say the last scene when Caitlyn calls is like, Rick, you're brilliant. And he's like, don't say that too loud. I have a reputation. I was like, yes, he's so good.
Yeah, he's very cute, especially considering his circumstances. Like, I guess with regards to Caitlyn being a parallel of Emma.
Mm-hmm.
Emma, I would say, in terms of the activism at least, Emma would be like the child of Caitlyn and Rick, you know? Because Emma actually took actions.
True.
Caitlyn needed Rick to get her to take an action, even though many of Emma's actions were out of pocket.
We're a little questionable, I would say.
Yeah, but I would definitely say that, like, Emma would be, if you combined Caitlyn and Rick in this episode, in terms of how Emma acts in regards to her activism, even though she's more on the Caitlyn side, of course, with respect to her being a privileged white girl.
Yeah, Emma being Spike and Shane's child doesn't add as much as it would have for it to be Rick and Caitlyn's child, but is what it is, I guess.
Well, Spike is also pretty outspoken.
True, but I guess with like the environmental stuff, yeah, okay, that is true. Spike definitely is way more outspoken, which fits Emma.
Yeah.
Do you want to go into Spike? Do you have anything else for Caitlyn and Rick?
I don't think so.
Let's do it. It's our time, little baby Emma.
Yes, time to talk about the plot that started it all.
The little fetus.
And the only episode of Degrassi to ever win an Emmy.
Woo! Oh, this was it. I didn't realize this was it.
Well, that's why they named Emma.
No, I knew that. I didn't know that this was the episode. Wow, season one, they won an Emmy?
Yeah.
Good for that. Okay, love this show. Let's hear it.
So, for Spike, towards the last few episodes of the season, Lucy is having a rager at her house, and Spike and Shane sneak off into one of the rooms to have sex. They are not officially dating at this point, but a couple weeks later, Spike is feeling very moody, and she realizes that her period is late. She is hesitant to get a pregnancy test, but her friends, the twins, Heather and Erica, encourage her to go get one. So she goes and gets a test, but when she goes home, her mom catches her with it. And surprisingly, her mom is actually pretty supportive of the fact that Spike might be pregnant. So her mom takes her to the clinic, actually, to get her a more official pregnancy test. And she goes with Shane because Shane also wants to know whether she is pregnant. So, of course, she finds out that she is, in fact, pregnant. And at the end of this episode called It's Late, she is not entirely sure what she's going to do. She is like, I don't want to get an abortion, but I also don't want to be pregnant either. I'm only 14, blah, 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 blah. And the episode ends not really resolved as to what Spike is going to do. But the next episode, Spike is upset that Shane doesn't really talk to her anymore. And she ends up going to Wheels for advice about what to do since Wheels is adopted. So she's like, oh, how does it feel to be adopted? Like, maybe I'll put my baby up for adoption. Wheels, of course, is going through his own adoption storyline at this point. And he tells Spike that he is happy being adopted. He loves his adoptive parents and he doesn't blame his birth parents. And this episode ends where Shane goes up to Spike and says, I want nothing to do with this baby. I want nothing to do with you. And Spike kind of rips him a new one for that. And that's pretty much how the season ends for them. I guess she never explicitly says it, but she does not say that she's not going to have the baby. So,
yikes. We love 14-year-olds who get pregnant on this show. Woohoo. Okay. So, yeah, this was interesting because I feel like you don't really see how much time passes over episodes. It's kind of just like assumed. I don't know. I just figured maybe it was like a week or two, whatever, blah, blah. But this time we actually have like, it jumps a month. And then yeah. We're like, oh. And then it jumps like whatever. But anyway, did we even know Spike and Shane were dating?
I don't think they ever date officially.
Okay. They just hooked up at that party.
Right? Because Spike says like, oh, I wanted him to like me. And then when Spike is acting weird towards Shane, he goes up to her and says, Spike, I thought we were going steady, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it seems like they maybe had a kind of flirtationship, situationship type of deal, but they were never officially boyfriend, girlfriend.
True. Okay. That makes sense. I also feel like everything that Spike does and like is just 100% true. Like, I think this is exactly how a girl, even like I probably would have acted like this, like where it's like deny, 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 but also everybody's giving you the wrong information. What was one of the things? They're like, oh, you can't get pregnant if you stand up really fast after, or you can't get pregnant if it's your first time. That got me. Who started that one? That's a bad rumor. Don't do that.
But I feel like that's, I don't know if that was necessarily something I ever heard talked about in middle school. But I feel like that's one of the first things, like, your health teacher tells you.
Right?
Right? That it's like, yes, you can get pregnant your first time.
Like, you can get pregnant on your period, you can get pregnant whenever. It's just, like, just wear a freaking condom, basically, was the whole thing. And it came down to that Spike and Shane did not. And, yeah, she gets the test. Her and her mom's relationship is, like, it's just so interesting because I didn't realize that she also is a single mom.
Yeah.
So when she was like, I'm a single mom, like, you're not making this any easier for me. And then she like throws the pregnancy test at her. It's so funny because if I was a mom and someone threw something like that at me, I'd just throw it right back. I would have been like, nice try. Let's do that again. But she did not. She's a better person than I am. And the fact that her mom was so supportive was just so nice. Like, it was just so different than Manny. You know, like, Manny couldn't even say anything.
Yeah, Manny never even told her parents. Oh, I guess she told her mom, right?
And then her mom was like, don't say anything. Your dad will, like, kill you.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is, for someone who doesn't want anything to do with this, the fact that Shane goes with her to the clinic was kind of surprising.
Yeah, especially considering how trash he is at every point after this.
Right? Yeah.
I guess he wanted to know right away whether she was actually pregnant or not.
That's the thing. Okay, let's say he did want to know right away. And then she's like, I don't want to keep it. Maybe I'm going to get an abortion. And he's like, don't do that. And she's like, okay, maybe I'll have the baby. Well, don't do that either. Shane, what's the option here, man? You going to have the baby? Like, such a child. That's such a child way to look at it.
Yeah, it is so interesting to me how Spike and Shane were not actually dating.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big, I feel like in the 80s, I don't know how sex was viewed, honestly. So I've like, because I know for the longest time, it was so conservative. Mm-hmm. And then the 80s, I know people were kind of more like open to doing a lot of different things. So maybe that's why it was kind of just like, whatever. But I feel like now with all the education we get, if you're like 14 and having sex, there's something like wrong. And we're like, what's going on? Like, you good?
Well, even in general with teenagers having sex, I feel like they don't really have casual sex with people who they're kind of interested in, right?
And for the first time, too.
Yeah, especially that.
But I also was thinking the script kind of said everything that is kind of like one of those like corny things where you're like, oh, you can't get pregnant the first time, or she's like, why me? Or like, whatever. But then when she said, I tried to stop it, kind of, that was a little sketchy to me.
Yeah.
I didn't really like that. I was trying to figure out if maybe she just didn't want to be as held responsible as Shane is in that situation, or if Shane did kind of take advantage of her. Like, we don't know. It just seemed like really sketchy when she was like, I tried to stop it, kind of.
Yeah, to me, it kind of feels like she didn't really want to have sex, but like she said, I wanted him to like me, so I did it anyway.
Yeah, and I do not like that at all. Obviously, we can't change anything about that, but it just like sucks that that's what happens. Not that it would have been better if they were in love. I guess it kind of falls into the like Jenna and Casey thing. Because I think, were Jenna and Casey like official when she got pregnant?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he left Claire for Jenna.
But Craig and Manny weren't.
No.
Because she was hooking up with him when he was with Ashley?
Yeah, so Craig was an affair.
Okay, so there's the casual sex piece too, I guess. Even though they seem more in love with each other than Shane and Spike do.
Well, when Craig and Manny hooked up, that was Manny being like, oh, if I give him sex, he will dump Ashley for me.
Okay, so it's basically almost the same if I have sex with him, he'll like me situation.
Yeah.
Rough. I also was kind of shocked that her friends realized that she had to have been pregnant because she like didn't get her period. They were like, well, what do you mean? Like, what, isn't it just late? And she's like, no, I had sex. They're like, what? It almost was like, you can get pregnant that way. That was just interesting.
Well, because the first scene of the episode is like everybody's banging on the door while Spike and Shane are banging.
Yeah, it was like pretty nasty.
It's like, how are they able to even have sex with everybody outside the door asking, what are you guys doing in there?
They're like, get out. I need to use the bathroom. No, I'm kidding. They were not in there.
Yeah, going back to Spike and her mom, it is just very shocking, I guess, how supportive her mom was.
Was her mom the one who said, like, I had Spike at 17?
Yes.
Okay, so I get it. Like, I think it kind of makes sense. She's, what, 14 years older than she was when she had Spike, so she almost probably remembers what it's like to be, you know, pregnant at such a young age, even though Spike is like, you don't know what it's like to be 14. It's like, literally everybody does, calm down.
Although, yeah. that line in particular, they have Emma say the exact same thing in the first episode of Degrassi.
Oh, shoot.
No, Emma says to Spike, like, you have no idea what it's like to be 12.
Oh my god, iconic.
So like, I liked that parallel when I noticed it.
I like that, that's cute. Memes.
But, yeah, otherwise, this is kind of the problem of us watching this in 2023, where like this episode was so revolutionary at the time for showing teen pregnancy, but yeah. Like, we've seen teen pregnancy in every other TV show these days, you know?
Oh my god, it's in everything. We're like, another one, like, how common is this?
Yeah, so like, to me, in the context of all the teen pregnancies that I have seen on TV shows, this is revolutionary, or like, this is special just because of how young Spike is. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a middle school teen pregnancy ever.
No. No one wants to do that. That's like too scary.
And also, in general, teen pregnancy rates are going down.
That's good. I didn't realize that.
So that's the other thing about watching this in 2023. So it's kind of hard for me to view this as like being a, you know, Emmy award winning episode, just because the acting is a little rough here and there. For one thing, this is really the first time that we actually see Spike as a character.
Yeah, like, for
before
real.
This, she's mostly just in the background.
And then now she's like, woohoo, I get all the attention because I'm pregnant.
Yeah.
I also liked the fact that they talked about abortion too.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Shane was like, you can't abort it, it's alive. And she's like, no, it's not, you dumbass. It's a fetus. And he's like, okay, well, it has rights. It's like, does it though? It just was interesting to be hearing that side of it, like in the 80s, because people are still doing that now.
Yeah.
So it just is, there's all those parallels, there's all these things. You're like looking back, you're like, wow, the 80s were so different, like the dressing, whatever. But, you know, this stuff still stands. There's still people out there that are like, don't do that. It has rights. Like, even though you're 14, you have to keep it. Texas. Yeah.
So that's why I liked the subsequent episode where Spike talks to Wheels about adoption, just because mm-hmm. they really showed like all the options. And Degrassi, I think, does that most of the time. I guess I've talked about how with many of the newer pregnancies, they kind of make abortion not an option.
Mm-hmm.
Like with Jenna, it's like she didn't know she was pregnant until it was too late. Or Claire, it's like, I might never be able to get pregnant again because I had freaking cancer.
Yep.
So I guess there's that aspect of the newer Degrassi pregnancies, but with this in particular, they really talk about all the potential options of what Spike could do.
I thought it was so cool that they also, we'll talk about it more in the next, or whenever we talk about it next, but I love that they did the Wheels episode of him talking about his adoption and also bringing his father, you know, back yeah. as well. Right. It was just, that was so good. She's doing her research, whereas like Jenna ignored that she was pregnant for like 6 of the 9 months. So
yeah,
anything's better than that.
The other thing I wanted to point out was like Linda Schuyler, the mother of Degrassi, of course, talked about how the original thought was that Stephanie would be the one to get pregnant.
Okay.
But they decided not to do that, to kind of step away from like the slut shaming that would come with that. Because
oh,
you know,
yeah.
Stephanie's whole thing is she is dressing a little promiscuous and, you know, flirting with all the boys. So they didn't want to send that message that Stephanie got pregnant because of her behavior throughout the season.
I wish they'd stuck with that with like literally all the women in the future who we talk about it, who always have to face like a hardship to like turn their character around. You know, like Paige and her assault, Darcy and her assault, any but Manny abortion. Like it's just like all those, they always have to have these hard things to like make them quote unquote like better people. Holly J, just being Holly J.
Yeah.
So I think that the fact that Spike, even though we don't know a lot about her, we know that she's like not a bad person. And like, that's okay that like not bad people also get pregnant.
Right.
And I love that they didn't pick Stephanie, because that's really a lot. I was scared when you were like, they were going to pick. I'm like, I knew you were going to say Stephanie. I'm so glad they did not. Plus she left the show. So.
Yeah. How are you going to have Emma without her mom? Yeah. Cause like, I feel like Stephanie and Spike are kind of night and day. Like, Spike dresses super conservatively, besides her hair.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's very pointed, I guess, that they chose Spike over Stephanie.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Although, I do wish that they maybe did anything with Spike before this episode, so that we knew who she was before she was pregnant.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only things we've seen is, like, sometimes she's talking to Caitlin in the hallway, or sometimes she's talking to Stephanie in the hallway. Like, I saw, there's one scene where, like, her and Stephanie were talking, and Stephanie went in the bathroom, and that's when she, like, was talking. Like, she just was a background character, basically.
Yeah. Which I do like how Junior High does pretty much have all of the characters in every episode.
Yeah, I do, too.
That really makes this era of Degrassi feel more like an actual school rather than you just have extras in the background in modern Degrassi, and the only characters who show up are the characters who the plot is about.
Yeah.
So I definitely like that aspect, at least. But in terms of like such a big thing, like a pregnancy, I would have liked to maybe see some buildup to Spike. Because when I first watched this, I was like, did I miss something? Like, did I miss when Spike and Shane got together or what? Because I was very confused.
That's why I asked you. I was like, were they dating? Like, because I didn't see anything either.
Yeah.
And you know everything, so.
Yeah, so I would have liked something, like, even if it wasn't related to Spike and Shane, just, like, introduce us to who Spike is, you know, before she is pregnant.
I agree. Anything else for our first episode back? Any of these characters? Got any last-minute thoughts?
I guess my only comment is how many, like, big topics they did in this season. Like, we already talked about the two big ones would be the abuse and the pregnancy.
Yeah.
But, like, thinking about season one of The Next Generation, for example, the only big plots in that season were, like, Emma's online predator and, like, Ashley does ecstasy.
Right. I feel like Ashley doing ecstasy was a pretty huge one for a first season of a show.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with that.
Yeah, but like, for example, you have Craig's abuse of season two. The first pregnancy with Manny isn't until season three. Whereas here you have 1-2 punch of all these major things going on. While the subplot is usually Arthur and Yik being stupid.
Yeah, they're like such B characters. It's so funny.
Yeah.
I like it. They don't need more drama than what they've got. But we'll talk about them eventually.
Yes. I think the grade sevens are our plan for the next episode, at least.
That works for me.
Yeah, other than that, that's all I got for right now.
Okay. Sounds good. I feel like for only having four characters, that wasn't, and only, you know, three of them really had anything. Shane was kind of just involved.
He was a sperm donor.
Basically, unfortunately. Cool. It's a short one. Good job.
Yes. So now that we have transitioned from modern Degrassi to classic Degrassi, we can now focus all our energy on the people who didn't make it to Next Generation.
Except for Joey.
Yeah, but Joey, he doesn't really do anything for himself, at least in this season. He's just kind of the class clown who pops in everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Like, really the only thing he actually does is the Rick abuse stuff.
Yeah, he's kind of like, he's like a floater, basically.
Yeah.
Cool. But
we will check back in with him, I'm sure, in our next episode. So thank you for listening.
And we'll see you soon.